The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey, everybody. Welcome again to Afternoons with Mike here on the Shepherd Radio Network. I have with me today a couple of people. One I've just met today for the first time, and the other a longtime friend, John Stimberger. How long have we known each other? It's got to be 30 years.
At least, yep.
Yeah, my word, a long time. But with John today in the studio is a new addition to the Florida Family Policy Council, and that is Melissa Woodford. And Melissa, you were a student and then you did an internship that I'm aware of with our friends over at the Liberty Council with Matt Staver and Holly Mead. Mm-hmm. Know those people, love those people.
Yes, and I also worked for them for a period of time.
Oh, you did? Mm-hmm. So beyond the internship.
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, they were very high on you, thought that you had a lot of talent, and that's clear. Clearly obvious that you do, or otherwise John would not have added you to this illustrious team. So welcome to the studio today.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Mike. It's an absolute pleasure.
Well, let's start with you, Melissa. Let's find out a little bit about you, where you grew up. How did you come to know the Lord?
Sure. Well, first off, I just want to reiterate again, it is such an honor to be here with you and John. I know that it is a pleasure to be fighting the good fight of the faith on this team. I know that one issue particularly that's on my heart is to be fighting for the pro-life cause. And with 2022, that is something that all eyes are on as we're looking to the Supreme Court. But a little bit of my background as to how I got here. Well, I started in college at the University of Central Florida studying broadcast journalism. Even prior to that, I studied at Reformation Bible College for 1 year because I wanted to study theology. That's local here in Sanford, Florida. And one thing that I noticed while at UCF was that as an outspoken Christian conservative, it was very difficult for me to successfully publish stories that I wanted to be published. I noticed this trend as I went as an intern over at National Public Radio as well. When I wanted to produce stories that were political in nature or maybe something of a more philosophical nature, I noticed that it was much more difficult to get those types of stories accepted and approved. And just as a general principle, when I tried to talk about these stories at UCF, they would often get censored as well. So
this is even before the cancel culture.
So I would argue it was roughly around when it was all beginning. I had one particular professor at the University of Central Florida who told me that he wanted everyone in the classroom to succeed and show initiative except for me. What happened was at the very...
He actually said that.
My
word.
It's unbelievable.
But
it is unbelievable.
What happened was he said the very first few weeks of class, it was when the New York abortion law was passed that allowed abortion all the way up to the last part of the baby's life.
Full term.
Before it was born. So full term, always allowed. And I just voiced some slight disapproval to that in the classroom. And ever since that point onward, he said that you are not allowed to talk about this issue. And when I wanted to pitch a story about a pro-life mobile medical unit that would deliver free sonograms and pregnancy tests to women in the Central Florida area, he said, that is a hot button issue. I want you to stay away from this. And he actually said that I would not be allowed to address that in the class. And he said that my professionalism grade would be docked because I had different viewpoints on this.
So much for free speech and pro-choice, right? Choice was clearly not what he wanted.
It's the exact opposite of what you would think freedom of speech would be.
Yeah.
Journalism is supposed to allow for both sides of the issue to prevail, but instead he clearly only wanted one side. I actually said I would go interview and get a soundbite from a pro-choice advocate and also the woman who ran the mobile medical unit. And he said, no, you don't have any time to voice the opinion of the mobile medical unit. You can only air the soundbite of the person on the other side who would want to protest the bus. Mm-hmm. So that's the type of one-sided journalism that was prevailing, at least in my particular classroom at the University of Central Florida. I think that there are other classrooms and different professors who had a different approach. Unfortunately, that was not the case in my classrooms, but I just wanted to expose this story because I believe that journalism should be free and it's clear that today in classrooms it is not.
It's not only not free in classrooms, but people on Twitter, people who are losing their Facebook accounts, being suspended permanently because of speaking out in a way that is being deemed wrong. I mean, woke. Yeah, you know, the woke, they are woke. We're not. They're woke. We're not. So there, if you don't see it that way, man, this is a crazy time in which we live. And I know our founders would have to be just rolling in their graves right now if they would have ever had any idea that this would be going on.
Oh, absolutely. The First Amendment would, it's definitely something that protects our freedom of speech. And you see President Donald Trump, you see things like the founder of Project Veritas, James O'Keefe, being completely deplatformed and removed from Twitter. And things like this should not be allowed to happen. We need to somehow take back the media. And that's one of the reasons I'm so grateful for you, Mike, that you are striving to do so in a way that glorifies God, in a way that allows us to share our opinions freely. And I'm really grateful that you're having us on today.
Well, thank you. You know, this program, we're not political per se at all. But what we are, we want to be one that looks through the lens of a biblical worldview. And that is something that I'm grateful that we have the freedoms yet to do. And, you know, a lot of us that are in this side, I complain as much as anybody else about the media. And then I remember, wait a minute, I am part of the media. Wait a minute. So that's, I got to be careful and make sure I qualify, because I am not part. I don't want to be part of that kind of a concept of media. And yet we are at a time when the very freedoms that any individual, and it doesn't matter whether they're part of the media, whether they're part of a political campaign of any kind at all, if they just say a certain word, just like you were shut down by your college professor, they're being shut down from the platform and their rights are being taken away from us. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've just got to have this attitude that we're fighting again. And I think in America, we're seeing things maybe more clearly that have to do with persecution, that have to do with having to fight for what we believe. That's all part of where we are today. And it's probably going to get a whole lot worse before it gets better. Well, that's really wonderful, Melissa. So you were at that beautiful campus of
Reformation Bible
Reformation.
College.
We were just up there for a tour and got to walk through all of the classes. I actually got to be in R.C. Sproul's office, and I was privileged to know R.C. and to have a couple of classes that I actually took under him. Mm-hmm. My favorite joke about that is he ate my popcorn. Yeah. Danny Jones, our my good friend, our John and my pastor for years and years, told me that if I wanted to make a hit with R.C., I would pop popcorn right before the class started. And he would camp in front of my desk. And that's exactly what he did. He camped right in front of me and ate my popcorn throughout the whole class. And I loved it because I'm getting to have all this time with R.C., a guy that I just love. So he was a gift.
He's such an incredible mentor. Mm-hmm. I love all the books he's contributed.
Oh, yeah.
All of his Table Talk magazine, as well as Renewing Your Mind, their radio programs.
It's
been
yeah.
so instrumental in my faith and my family's faith.
Well, we have those on our Ocala and Gainesville stations. Mm-hmm. We have them. We're hoping to be able to add them here in Orlando as well. Mm-hmm. But those are dear, dear people. And for a young person, you carry quite a scorecard here of knowing people, of working for people, and getting to take classes at that wonderful school. That's mm-hmm. got to be something that you really look back on and smile.
Well, it's interesting that I didn't know what I wanted to do when I began college, but I did know that I wanted to study God and to know Him better. And that is one of Reformation Bible College's mottos. It's for us to know God mm-hmm. and to love Him better. And that year was probably one of the best of my life. It was a foundation for everything I went on to do after that. And I believe it is what prepared me to feel when people were targeting me for my outspoken Christian faith. That's what helped me carry through. So I'm so grateful for that year, and I love the ministry of Reformation and Bible College.
Well, I'm glad to have you in the studio with us today. John, I know you've got to be glad to have this young lady on your
Absolutely.
Team.
We're very pleased to have Melissa on our team now. you know, one of our strategies is to reach the next generation. And so we're putting our money where our mouth is and trying to hire young people that can relate to the next generation. Aaron DiPietro is 24 years old. He's our voice and eyes and ears in Tallahassee, Florida. And so it's part of a very intentional strategy to be well-rounded as an organization and to reach all people groups. So,
well, now, how did you first hear about this young lady?
So it's kind of funny. I was just at the homeschool convention, hanging out, exhibiting. And she came over to the booth and said, I love what you guys do. I'm passionate about everything you do. It's amazing. And I thought, okay, this seems too good to be true. And, you know, so we just started talking about where she's at, where she wants to go. And so that's how we first met, is that she, you know, connected with us in an exhibit situation at the homeschool convention. And I think she was there, you know, on behalf of another ministry. And so that's how we met each other. And through a series of conversations, then we just thought, okay, we need to hire this person. So.
A young person with an old soul. You don't find that every day.
Yes, exactly.
You know, and I mean that in the most positive sense, to have the heart, the convictions that that we've learned in our lives to have, but to see that in a young person.
It's really more of a biblical soul than it is an old soul.
That's right.
You think old soul, you think about music and movies and culture.
Which I am
really,
an old soul for that.
Right, exactly. Me too. But, you know, I think when you really look at the scripture seriously, we all should come to very similar conclusions on certain big issues, right?
I agree completely.
And so that's the thing that's really remarkable, is a lot of young people are not looking at scripture. They're not looking at church history. They're not looking at the collective wisdom of what the church has said and all of that. They're just kind of, you know, winging it based upon what they're hearing in social media and from their professors. So.
You know, while we're talking about this kind of freedom and the kind of, I guess you could say even the way you were treated, the rudeness with which your professors had in college, where they're telling you, you may not talk that way. It's almost like you were saying something that was foul. And, you know, you hear the language coming in a corrective tone when all you were doing was standing for something, like John said, that was biblical, something that was right. I think of Apostle Paul's words to us, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are noble, whatsoever things that are pure, trustworthy, think on these things. Well, that kind of wisdom is thrown right out the window, isn't it?
It is encouraging to hear you share those points with me. And I know that there are several other students who are considering journalism, and they're considering whether they will have to go through similar experiences. And I just guess I want to encourage them that when they feel alone and when they feel like the world or maybe their professors even are against them, to ground themselves in biblical community. I know that there will always be seasons that any young person will be alone going through a trial of their faith. When that happens, they just need to surround themselves with godly, like-minded believers who can support them, to be a community around them, and to continue to convince them that the things that they grew up believing are worth it and will get them through it. There were seasons where I felt very lonely as a journalism student. Sometimes you can spend all of your time in the studio and all of the time in the sound rooms, and you're just starting to think, am I wrong in my viewpoints, because they're being so forced down. And it made me even start to think, should I change some of my beliefs on some of these things to go with the flow and kind of fit in a little better? But that community, like I said, really grounded me and helped me get through it when I felt those times of loneliness.
Well, I think every person that stands for the Lord in this day and age, they're going to have times of loneliness. Yeah. I believe that's something that we've just got to accept as part of the call. I don't believe that part's going to get any better anytime soon. And I know John, speaking of that, John Stimberger, if you've just tuned in, my guest today, John Stimberger from the Florida Family Policy Council, Melissa Woodford, who is now a part of the team for this council, and you'll be joining us. I'm privileged to get to go along with you guys at the big pro-family event that's coming up in Tallahassee just in a couple of weeks. But I know that you'll be there, and you'll be in the midst of not only a growing number, as John mentioned, of young people, your age, peers to you, maybe just a little bit older, but also, that's the beautiful thing about that event, you have multi-generations in that one room, and they're all there for the same purpose. And that is a beautiful thing. And to see a group in Tallahassee that's fighting. And last year, John, we had the governor. I don't know if he's going to be able to make any addresses to us this year or not.
We've invited him. We'll see if he comes or not. Yeah. He's got a busy schedule. So,
and, you know, we didn't know last year until just right before that he was going to come. But how wonderful it is to live in a state where we can do these kinds of things. We can see yep. these kinds of things. Yep. And I might even say it this way. We can fight these kind of fights, the good fight
yep.
for the faith. And that's what you're doing, Melissa. So thank you for doing that. I really do appreciate it. And I know John and the rest of the team there are very happy. Before we have a break here, John, why don't you jump in and kind of give us a bird's eye view of everything that's going on this month at Florida Family Policy Council as
yeah.
Pro Family Days are almost here.
Yeah, so the big event you're talking about for your listeners is Pro Family Days. And people are always asking me, how can I be more involved? Well, this is the best way. It's a two-day event, Monday and Tuesday, the 24th and 25th. You travel up to Tallahassee at about 3:00. We have a training from 3 to 5. There's a reception. There's a dinner. And we have legislator speakers. We have Abby Johnson coming. Very excited about that. Many of you know Abby Johnson, former Planned Parenthood director, who the movie Unplanned, her life story was all about that.
Yeah, and played so effectively in that movie.
Yep. And so so that's on Monday night. Then on Tuesday morning, we have our legislative prayer breakfast, where often some of the top legislators come. And we have, again, Abby Johnson and also Congressman Kat Kamrick from the Ocala, Gainesville area is going to be there as well to tell her story. She's got a remarkable pro-life story. She's been homeless before, and to think now she's not a member of the Congress is really quite amazing.
Oh, that is amazing.
So she's going to tell her story. And then we have appointments for everybody that registers to meet with their legislators. And then we also have a meeting at the Florida Supreme Court. We in dialogue usually with a justice there. And finally, we meet in the House or Senate chamber just as closing in prayer, and we are addressed. So it's a great way to understand exactly what's going on. We train you on the bills that are priority so you can talk to the legislators about what's on our agenda and why we think those things are important.
You know, we live in this great nation where our government was intended to be a republic, where there is the ability to be not only represented by these that are in the state house and in the national Congress, but the avenue of communication, the freedom to be able to convey to the people so that they can rightly represent yep. us. And that's really what you're talking about. You yep. are one that would help put together these avenues of thought, the avenues of communication. And that's really so important to a legislator to know, really, to hear from
yep.
what the people are feeling and saying.
So folks can sign up for this event at flfamily.org. Again, it's a two-day event, Monday and Tuesday. We're done Tuesday at about 1:00, 2:00 most, mm-hmm. and folks are released to go home. But it's a life-changing event. We've had legislators come out of this event. We had a young man who actually, David Barrero, who came years ago, and now he's a state legislator, and that was his first foray to Tallahassee. So it can be life-changing in a number of ways for those that come.
Well, I pray that that happens again this year. Melissa Woodford, John Stenberger, my guest today. We'll be back with them in just a moment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike. Here in the studio with me today, two guests, Melissa Woodford and John Stenberger, both from Florida Family Policy Council. And this big event that we were talking about at the end of segment one is going to be taking place just real soon, a couple of weeks away in Tallahassee. So you said there are some scholarships available. How does that happen?
That's right. So right now, if you go on to our website, one of the very first sliders will take you to our registration page for our Pro Family Days event. If you click on the Get Tickets button, there will be an option for a scholarship for our students. All you have to do is select the +1 button, go down and click Continue, and then be sure to accept the terms and conditions once you filled out all the information. But that will allow our students who are interested in coming to have a full tuition scholarship paid for. And we're really excited to have them because usually we have a good number of students coming. A lot of them are homeschooled. Mm-hmm. I myself was homeschooled, so I'm a big proponent of that. And we want these students to know about the process of what it looks like to pass a bill, what are the most important bills that are passing in this legislative session, and we want them to have that full immersive experience. Mm. So that is available for them.
And that could be college students, Mike. It could be, you know, teenagers, whatever, at any level, we want young people to be a part of this process as an active learning thing, and they can get credit for it also for various programs and whatnot.
So. You know, I think both of you and my friend Dave Zanotti with the American Policy Roundtable, he made a statement to me on one of my programs that I've never forgotten, talking about the call to action as to what we can do as individuals in this country that we love. What can we do to become kind of like guardians and care for and steward this great republic that we have? And what he said is going to have to happen. It's exactly what you guys are talking about. It's the young people of the day, or for that matter, older people alike, who are going to be willing to get into the fray of government and step up and run for office. And for young people, that's a wonderful goal, is to see young people like yourself who have not only an ability to do it, but I think more even with that, it would be the heart to do it, the desire to do it. Because there's a lot about that that really is hard work. I mean, tough work. You mentioned already being lonely. You were mocked, Melissa. You were kind of ostracized from other students only because of what you believe. And like I said, that's not going to get any better. But if we have young people today who are answering that clarion call that they're going to be defenders, they're going to be the watchman on the wall, so to speak, that's what we need.
I definitely believe that one of our duties as Christians is to act justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with our God. And especially in this season, when we're under an administration that is fundamentally and diametrically opposed to some of the things at least that we as Christians stand for, like life, the family, and marriage, and liberty, we need to be on the front lines fighting these things, because I do believe that whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him it is sin. Yeah. I believe that these things are completely contrary to what we believe as Christians, and we need to fight for them. We can't just be passive and let these bills get passed, these policies get made, and these ideas run rampant. We need to be fighting them, and we need to be vigilant so that we are fighting the good fight of the faith, like we mentioned earlier.
Yeah, you know, I feel like we need to take an offering, because that was some pretty good preaching right there. That was some pretty good preaching, Melissa. You know, it's clear that you have in your heart the Word of God, and that is, I mean, to walk humbly as a young person today is probably one of the most daunting things that from a standpoint of intimidation, from the standpoint of the crowd, and if there's any man-pleasing in the hearts of young people today, that command is going to be lost. That command, or at least, is going to be greatly intimidated. But to see you standing strong and make that your life goal, I agree. What a difference it will be.
Yep.
Is that not true?
Yep.
If our young people today were to grab a hold of that.
Yep.
And you mentioned, John, I know this has been something you've desired for years, to see people of all ages, especially young people, and that was probably never more demonstrated by the wonderful work you've done in establishing Trail Life. When all of the nonsense started coming out, and you're an Eagle Scout yourself, all of that stuff that was coming out about the changes inside of the American scouting system, it's what forced you to form Trail Life.
Yep, it's amazing. Trail Life now has, you know, 900 troops in all 50 states, about 35,000 young people engaged, and so it's really amazing. Here in town in Orlando at Orangewood Presbyterian, there's an American Heritage Girls and a Trail Life troop meets on Tuesday nights at 7 o'clock. So, but you can check out where the troops are on traillifeusa.com all over the country to see if one is in your area.
Now, I know you, and I know how hard you work. I've known you for years, like I said, over 30 years. It's not like you had lots of extra time to take that kind of burden on, but you did it as a labor of love.
That was a miracle story, actually. We took the entire year of 2013, and our board actually released us from our normal responsibilities, and we did nothing but try to rescue the Boy Scouts from making this bad decision in the first half of the year. Then when they made the decision in May, and I was there on the ground in Texas when they had the national convention, they didn't let me speak. It was basically a closeout of any opposing views that were articulated.
Yeah.
Once they made the decision, we realized we had tens of thousands of people all over the country following us And it was like, what's next? So we met in Louisville, Kentucky. I had every major denomination, every Christian denomination, Catholics, Baptists, Missouri Synod, Calvary Chapel was there. We also had major pro-family groups from around the country, former retired scouting, people with a professional in scouting that had quit, and American Heritage Girls leadership was there. And we spent the entire day in the summer of 2013 hammering out what this organization would look like. And that's where we came up with a Christ-centered, church-based, scouting, a Christian scouting movement for boys that would focus on character, adventure, and leadership. And then several months later, we had a big convention in Nashville, Tennessee. Mike Huckabee spoke, mm-hmm. Mike Ferris spoke, and that's where Trail Life USA was announced. The name was born. We had just thousands of people following us all over the country. It was really remarkable.
When I look back, John, and I remember the early days, your heart, we had talks way back 30 years ago, and we participated in these big events that we called the bashes, and there's a whole lot of John Stenberger that I know. I know a lot about you that I guarantee you nobody else knows. But we had some really great times together back then. But could you ever, back then, I know you wanted to make a difference, I know you desired to make a difference, but could you have ever had a clue as to the paths that God was going to open up for you?
I still see myself as a punk kid in Daytona Beach with long hair and a ponytail that's riding on a skateboard. Mm. And, the day my father passed away and my sister called me and said, "Dad, John, Dad's dead." That was the day my whole life changed. And God just racked my conscience and forced me to understand what's important in life and the brevity of life. And everything changed in that moment. It was ironic that the worst event of my life became the best event in my life because it focused me on what's important and drove me from being a selfish kid to a purpose-driven young person that was trying to understand how to change the world.
Well, change the world you are. And if anyone has any doubts about that, I was privileged to be with you again, playing guitar for you at the big fall event that you had this past year in South Orlando. And to see and to be a part of that meeting that night, here we have, an amazing crowd, 600-700 people gathered together for a fundraising event for this wonderful council. And the people that were there, I mean, it's just nothing. Dennis Prager speaking, nothing less than amazing. And we're just proud of you, John, for
Thank
what
you.
You're doing.
Appreciate
I mean, it's really great to see the hand of God do what he's doing through this organization. And speaking of work, which is what you always do, there is a huge, right now, a huge decision that is being considered in the United States Supreme Court. Now, you were there for the season of this decision, and we're talking about the Dodd case from Mississippi.
Yeah.
You were up there, I guess, Melissa, you were there as well, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And you guys were there for what would have been the oral argument phase of this. And I know decisions like this are never handed down quickly from the Supreme Court. It's probably going to be stretched, into the summer? Is that what you think?
Yeah, so the decision in the Dobbs case, D-O-B-B-S, for the Mississippi case, it is a 15-week protection on the unborn child passed by the legislature in Mississippi. The court picked it up and granted certiorari, which was very unusual because there was no conflicting cases between districts. So this is why, in part, we think this is going to be a significant thing. It's on appeal to the Supreme Court. They've heard oral argument. The decision will come out in June of this year, 2020.
I guess a lot of people would ask, first of all, why that long? Why do they do that?
Well, it's a complicated process of coming up with a decision immediately after or the week after the oral argument. The justices meet together in private chambers with nobody there other than themselves. So there's no law clerks, no one else. And they try to decide what the basic majority position is going to be. Then they determine who's going to write the majority position. And then oftentimes in a case, especially something like this, every justice will have a concurring opinion and a dissenting opinion or a distinguishing of the various parts of it. My prediction is they'll either outright reverse Roe versus Wade and say that under the 10th Amendment, it's a states' rights issue. States should be determining whether abortion is right or wrong and where the lines are. It's not a federal issue. That's a basic principle. If something is not in the Constitution, it is reserved for the states. That's what should have happened to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Should have, back at, yeah. in 1970. Yeah.
That's the most likely mm-hmm. thing and the most logical thing. The other possibility is that they just uphold narrowly this statute and say, okay, states can now restrict abortion and protect the unborn child up to 15 weeks and basically deconstruct the trimester system and this kind of artificial time system, which is we've only had since 1972 under Roe versus Wade. But most commentators, and from listening to the oral argument, I really do think that this is the moment. They're actually going to reverse Roe, and this will be sent back to the states. It doesn't mean that abortion ends. And in fact, it's not the end of the pro-life movement. It's the beginning of the pro-life movement, mm-hmm. because now states, all 50 states will battle, and they'll have to look at this issue, and the legislature, it'll become a decentralized issue again. And we'll have abortion-filled states where, like New York and California, where you'll have abortion completely legal through 9 months of pregnancy for any reason. You'll have abortion-free states like in Mississippi and in some other states where they'll just ban the barbaric procedure outright and say, we can live without this, as they have in Texas just recently. Mm-hmm. So, and also, I think you'll predict you'll see chemical abortions on the rise. Now we're talking about surgical abortions, but chemical abortions are very slippery. They can actually be more dangerous in some ways than even a surgical abortion because there's no attendance there. A woman is by herself basically giving birth and dumping a dead baby in a toilet on day two after the second round of pill. And so if you get the pills wrong, if you get the order correct, if you get scared after the first pill, then there's, and you don't want to do the second pill, there's all kinds of problems that happen with chemical abortions. It's not easy and clean. If you see the Unplanned movie, yeah. you see exactly what Abby Johnson went through. That's exactly the kind of hemorrhaging, the loneliness, the terror, and on the floor of her own bathroom. So that's what a chemical abortion, that's the reality of it. It's not like just taking a pill and going home and everything's just great.
Mm-hmm.
So I think and that's
even
what
in her
see.
Case, just to interject that, in her case, she was not prepared for that.
Yeah, and she worked in the clinic.
Yeah, she worked yeah. there. You would think that just out of sheer decorum for her, that they would have given her some level of warning about some of the side effects that are going yeah. to come, that are just part and parcel to this kind of event that's going on in her body. I mean, we are talking about the destruction of that baby and the yeah. the destruction of all of had, that changed yeah. in her womb. And it's it, like you said, it was nasty. It was devastating. Yep. And it could have been fatal.
Yep. So the Dobbs case is a big deal. Here in Florida, we're looking for a significant pro-life bill. We're recording this here on a Monday, but actually on when this is airing on Thursday, the bill will be announced because it's the deadline is Tuesday at 12 o'clock noon. And so we're expecting a very robust pro-life bill here in the state of Florida to be announced. And we're hoping to get behind that, the Pro Family Days event, and make sure that gets passed and the governor, DeSantis, signs it into law.
Wow. That would be the first time something like this has happened in Florida.
That's right. And in a post-Roe environment, we have the ability to really do much, much more to protect the unborn than we've ever had before. Now, there's a whole another layer of complexity to this. We have actually a fundamental abortion right in our state constitution that was smuggled in there in 1989 by liberal justices when a parental consent bill went up on appeal in a special session under Governor Martinez. We've been living for 30 years with that privacy right, quote unquote. It's artificial, though, because it's judge-made. It's not in the language of the text of the Privacy Amendment. It was adopted in 1980 by the people of Florida. But we now have a justices in the Supreme Court that understand textualism. These people are conservative in the sense that they'll look at the Constitution and read it for what it is in the text and not infer their own opinions into it. And so we're looking forward to an appeal for the court to actually look and see whether that constitutional decision on a fundamental right to abortion in our state constitution is actually there or whether it's judge-made law. And so that's what we're hoping to get out of this pro-life bill is having it appealed to see what the court actually says.
So really the scorecard would give two major events then. One would be the legislation that would be introduced this past Tuesday, and then the second would be the reversal of that language that's been used all the way back, I think you said until 89?
Yeah,
that far back. So that would be two major things that would be put into place in the state of Florida that would make yep. that would make these abortions not possible here.
Yep. And it's historical, Mike. Some of us have worked our entire life for this moment, and it's almost like we can't believe that it's here.
Right? Yeah.
The Dobbs case, we really think, is the case that will return the issue to the states and allow us to have the battle here.
Now, you know, when you think about it, what kind of, I just wonder what kind of impact hearing something like that, if that happens with the state of Florida and those two things actually become a part of our law, and then it's going to be months later in June, if the Supreme Court does exactly what you do, what kind of a ripple effect do you see happening?
You mean around the country or in the state?
Well, first of all, with here in Florida, having these two things possibly already signed and in effect, and then that reversal of the 1989 language put in by that judge, what would happen to Florida, first of all?
So I've advised the legislature to make the effective date of the bill that they pass after June so that the bill can't be challenged until after the Supreme Court's decision. That way they'll have a clean challenge based upon the principles of the federal decision and not held up in the meantime before the federal decision is made by the Supreme Court. So hopefully they do that. I don't know what the contents of that bill is going to be, but we're very excited to learn what it's going to be. And by the time this is aired, you can go onto our website at flfamily.org and it'll be there. We'll have all kinds of information on it on our legislative agendas.
Okay, let's pick that back up after this break. We're up against one. This is Afternoons with Mike. My guest today, Melissa Woodford, also John Stemberger. Stay tuned. Back again for one more segment with both John Stemberger and Melissa Woodford from Florida Family Policy Council. You know, the talk that you were just sharing with us about this proposal that you've made where the laws in Florida would go in effect after the possible reversal of Roe v. Wade in June by the United States Supreme Court. That is wise, and there is a little bit of, and you, this is your world that you live in. You have to know how to juggle these things legally and getting the things, let's say, not only through law, which that's the trick right there. That's what lobbyists make a lot of money every year being paid by. Yeah. By their special interest groups and all that, but there is at the heart of it still just that good old fashioned right heart and doing what's right attitude that our lawmakers need to have in order for these things to pass. And right now we're seeing in Florida a legislature in Florida and a government in Florida that is poised for some of these things to happen. Is that not right?
We have what's called a trifecta. That means the governor, the House leadership, and the Senate leadership all want to see something done. That's very rare.
Yeah.
You normally have one branch that's dragging its feet or that is the problem branch. But and as we look into the future, we're not going to have that trifecta with all three of those branches, given the leadership of the future of the House and the Senate. So we're very, very excited about this possible year being a year where we can make some real serious progress, especially in light of the Dobbs case and hopefully the reversal of Roe in June of this year.
John, how ironic is it that the very kind of trifecta you're describing is exactly what the current administration has in Washington?
Yeah,
the federal sense has the same thing. It's all locked in and very narrowly so. And many are believing that that will reverse out as a part of the midterm elections in November. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I think it's going to be a landslide. I mean, I think people are fed up. I think Virginia is a microcosm of what we're going to see all around the country. The rise of enraged parents against their school boards and local issues is the best development that this country has ever had. You're finally seeing the pushback on critical race theory, on the transgender ideology, on all the nonsense with COVID and the control of children, the deprivation of parents' rights. And let me tell you something, an angry mama bear is the best political development we've ever seen in America.
Yeah.
And I think you're going to see it at the polls this coming year.
What happened in Loudoun County, that needs to become a complete, let's just say, a standard or a banner that is raised in every part of the country where parents need to step up and say, no more. We're done with that stuff.
James Carville, who's the guy that advised Clinton back in the day, had this famous saying, it's the economy, stupid. And now it's like, no, it's parents' rights, stupid, right? Get with it. The social issues are winning the day now. People need to understand that. It's not just economics. It is like how this is affecting my life and my child. And that's a main issue that's going to drive the elections.
Well, one of the big things that I think every aware Christian needs to be paying attention to right now. It's going on in the whole area of voter rights. And over the weekend, and by the time this airs, I don't know what will happen, but we've heard news reports about the one holdout that's keeping this big social agenda has been Manchin.
Yeah.
And it appears that there have been people who are concerned that he might be weakening his position of holding out on this social reconstruct. And that's really what it would be, is it not?
Yeah, for the listeners, Joe Manchin is a Democrat, United States Senator from the state of West Virginia, and he's the only Democrat that's not following leadership, and so he's voting like a Republican sometimes.
Sometimes.
He's the person that's kind of holding the whole dam of nonsense from coming and you know, flooding the whole country with this stuff. So really need to pray for that guy. He's got a lot of decisions. He's not necessarily a principal. He's more of a pragmatist person. And so West Virginia is a very conservative area. He knows that. It's a big Trump area. And so if he were to do something too liberal, he could be voted out of office as a Democrat in West Virginia. So he's weighing his politics and all of that. So ultimately, all this is in the hands of our sovereign God. And so we just need to trust in him and pray that Manchin does the right thing in the end.
Yeah, because it's going to be a big deal if that one passes and things. I guess, you know, this is the big question that rolls in my mind all the time, John. When you have so many things that change in a whim or even like an executive, and now they're talking about removing the filibuster rights with all of that to make it just be a simple nuclear decision by a majority of the Senate, you know, for these things. When that happens, how difficult is it afterwards? Let's say there is a big reversal in this year, and maybe in 3 years there's going to be a reversal even in who owns the presidency, in terms of which party owns. What is the likelihood that a lot of these socialist kind of laws that were put into effect in some dubious manners could be reversed, much like that 89 clause that's guided abortion in Florida? Can you reverse out? Is it possible that people will be able to vote differently and pull back and restore our country?
It's a very complicated question because it depends on whether we're talking about executive orders, which are very easy for a president to switch, or we're talking about congressional acts, which requires the entire Congress to vote, or whether we're talking about regulatory issues, which happen at thousands of levels below the radar, where people are just implementing policy based upon the presidential appointment that they have. So it's a complex question, but I think we can turn this around in terms of policy and culture. And this is the thing, Mike, that I'm so passionate about. I want people to understand that there's a connection between politics, policy, culture, and the gospel. Mm-hmm. And it's not just separate things. These are things that all life is an integrated whole, right? Everything affects everything. And so to think that I can just do my church and do the gospel and that's my arena, and I get people are called to specific things, but things affect each other. And when you understand that, it just opens your brain up to realize, oh my gosh, these things affect each other. Mm-hmm. Our ability to have church and to freely worship and to speak truth in classrooms or wherever it is directly affected by these other factors. And so, you know, we don't put our trust in anything but God ultimately. And the church is the ultimate purpose of God in the earth in terms of expanding the kingdom. But that doesn't mean we don't look at the surrounding effects of the culture and the law and policy and media and how these things are coming in and closing in on the church. I've heard people say, well, you know, Christianity is exploding in China and they have a persecuted church. Well, does that mean we just throw up our hands and say, okay, persecute me, let's go through it? No, I think that's what we want at all. I mean, God wants us to be salt and light in all areas of life. We're just trying to be faithful. We can't control the outcome of anything. We just want to be faithful servants in every arena that we're found, to be media, whether it's law, medicine, science, politics, whatever the area is. We want to be faithful to bring the principles of truth and beauty and goodness and the scripture to those areas.
Well, we know that our freedoms that we enjoy and we have by and large enjoyed our entire lifetime that are being threatened right now, those freedoms did not come freely. Those freedoms were paid for with a big price. And it seems like, and I know it's early, we don't know exactly how all this is going to go, but it seems like if we look at Virginia as an example, it seems like at least some sectors of this country are realizing that they've been asleep at the wheel, mm-hmm. and it's time to wake up.
the pendulum has swung so far to the left. I mean, stuff, there's so much nonsense and just garbage that is assaulting the minds and hearts of our kids that I think mainstream Joe Lunchbucket, I mean, you just go into any place, I'm not talking about where believers are, like a bar or restaurant or something, they love DeSantis. They're just like, oh, I can't believe all this nonsense. The mainstream America is waking up to the left and how far it's gone. And that is not good for the Democrats. I mean, because you wake up Joe Lunchbucket, that's normally not political, and you're done. It's over.
And I think that's happened. And the soccer moms, like what happened in Loudoun. I mean, that was very clear that they've, like you said, I like how you said it, Mama Bear. They've awakened Mama Bear, and that's not a good thing.
Yep.
And that's something, I mean that with all loving due respect. Thank God our parents in this country are exhibiting some parental muscle.
And we ain't talking about homeschool moms, right? Or private school moms. We're talking about public school moms waking up saying, enough, I'm not going there. And what happened in that governor's race, I think we're going to see that all around the country.
Now, that brings up another thing, and I've got to bring this up because I know that we talked a little bit about it, the voting effects and all of that. But one of the big concerns that happened in November 20 was whether or not that election was legal from the standpoint of not having fraud. Was it? We know that there were aspects of the election itself, the way that certain voting laws were just overlooked and thrown right out. And there were things that happened, that they did happen, where there were irregularities. We know that.
Yeah.
So then now the big question on so many people's minds, what's 2022 going to look like? Is it going to be part two of that? Or would that same kind of, we're not going to go there, we're not going to allow that kind of attitude, will that prevail this November?
There's irregularities in every election. There seem to be an extraordinary number of very strategic irregularities in places where there's high Democrats. Whether they were enough to make the difference in the election, I don't know. This is I have friends that I really respect. Charlie Kirk thinks there was no fraud. Ken Cuccinelli, who worked for the Trump administration, thinks there was no major fraud. I have friends that think it was stolen.
Charlie Kirk believes there was fraud?
Oh, yeah. No, he's very clear. He says, I've looked at the best information, and the election was not stolen. Were there problems in Pennsylvania? Absolutely. I mean, they used COVID as a method of, you can't look here, and the poll workers can't see exactly what's going on and all this stuff. But he does not think, I mean, there's a lot of people I respect on both sides of this issue, so I don't know what to think about it. But look, they didn't do it in Virginia, where the thing is controlled by Democrats. It was a landslide. And so I think the election result's going to be so much, it won't even matter about the irregularities. And so that's my prediction. There's going to be a win, even if the left tries to do funny business with the polling.
Now, if you're right and the House is recaptured, how many seats potentially do you see sliding over to become red?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a federal question. I'm kind of laser focused on the state of Florida, but I just think we're going to see some major, I think the whole thing's going to turn around.
But switch it will though. Yeah. Okay. And friends, you heard John Stenberger say it here. That'd be the way it is. Oh my gosh. We're almost out of time. I really appreciate you two coming back in. John, as we look forward to Pro Family Days to kind of swing all of this back down to this big event that's just now days away, what do you hope to accomplish at this year's Pro Family Days in Tally?
First, we want to envision ordinary people that come to see what's going on in Tallahassee. And we, like, for instance, Mike, we bring pastors up to just pray for other members of the legislature, and the lights come on. They go from 0 to 100 to realizing, oh my gosh, there's a battle up here. Like, we can actually engage. What more can we do? And so it's fascinating to see people's perspective change when you actually go up and engage and see these men and women who are making these decisions, interact with them and see the godly ones and see the ones that are ungodly. And just, it's a remarkable experience. So flfamily.org, you can sign up for Pro Family Days, Monday and Tuesday, January 24th and 25th. It's a life-changing experience. It's like nothing you've ever been to. And so people always ask me, how can we get more involved? That's how they can get more involved. Come to Pro Life, Pro Family Days this month.
Are you going to have Webster Barnaby pray again, man?
He'll be there. I'm not sure what his participation will be. But
he lit that place up last time.
He's a preacher. He's a preacher.
Oh, my goodness. That was wonderful. And we wish you the best. What are you looking forward, Melissa? What's Pro Family Days really going to be like for you?
Well, two of the things that I've always prayed for that would happen in the course of my lifetime is the reversal of Roe v. Wade and also the reversal of the same-sex marriage decision. And with this momentum happening with the Dobbs decision, as we've discussed, and the pro-life movement making strides this year, I'm really excited to have our own pro-life bill pass in Tallahassee in Florida. And if I can help in a grassroots state effort level, mm-hmm. I would love to help at least my state do its part in promoting pro-life issues and values. And that's something I'm really grateful for to be a part of.
Well, these will be big meetings coming up in Tallahassee at Pro Family Days. John Stenberger, Melissa Woodford, thank you for coming in today and being a part of our program. And more importantly, thank you for the hard work and the banner that you carry for these things that are really biblical, that are really honoring to God, and really, it's not wrong to say you're doing God's will, man, by all of this. I believe you are.
Thank you
for doing it.
Thank you,
and standing strong. And friends, we thank you for joining us as well. We'll see you next time right here on Afternoons with Mike.